Welcome back to the Barry Capital Startup Sales Podcast. This is Evan McElwain, and this week we're joined by Dev Basu, founder and CEO of Powered by Search, to talk about pivoting your messaging during COVID-19. Welcome to the show, Dev.
Stoked to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Dev, tell me a little bit more about you and your company, Powered by Search.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to dig in. So I've been a career marketer. My first business was when I was 16, and I got into this weird and wild world of search engine optimization at a point where I was actually working at Microsoft and didn't know a lick about demand generation or digital marketing. And it came to be a fact where one of our SharePoint pages, which was, I don't know if you're familiar with SharePoint.
Yeah.
Interesting and somewhat archaic technology, ended up not being found by our own search engine. Now, Bing didn't exist at that point in time, so we had to use msn.ca, which is the Canadian subdomain or the Canadian domain, and our own search engine couldn't find a page on our own website. So that got me kind of curious and had me digging down this path of why was this happening, and I went down a rabbit hole and learned this acronym called SEO or search engine optimization. And just being as curious as I am, learned that, then started experimenting with paid ads using Google AdWords. And it's been really history since then. A couple of different roles in consulting and in-house. And finally, in 2009, I launched Powered by Search. And Powered by Search is a consulting agency where we help B2B SaaS and technology companies grow their ARR. And we do that by booking more demos and trials for them, primarily using sources like content, SEO, and paid search and social.
Got it. Okay, great. It's a really helpful intro. And hopefully for the small number of users who may not be as familiar with SEO, can you just give kind of the high level of when we talk about search engine optimization, what do we really mean? And maybe kind of how that fits into the way that people think about their overall approach to whether it's content strategy, kind of driving organic leads versus paid ads.
Yeah, 100%. So when we look at like the Cloud 100, for example, organic search being found on Google for relevant terms related to your software, your SaaS, your platform is usually generating the highest amount of demos and trials. And so in layman's terms, it's just when it comes to questions people ask Google and expect answers back, most of the time those answers, and you know, you get them in the form of videos and 10 blue links effectively, it pays to be one of those blue links being your own company. And so the process or the methodology in which you get your SaaS platform or website to start showing up and being visible, to be discoverable by somebody who's looking for your category plus the word software or how to in a particular use case that you help solve for, that is effectively where the payoff in SEO really comes in. And it's a part art, part science, but ultimately it comes down to having a website that users and Google can understand, having content and having something of substance to say and a way of providing value to your users. And then finally, having the ability to create some distribution and promotion of that content. And generally speaking, that comes in the form of either people talking about it on social media. So every time you get linked to or retweeted, that is just another signal to a search engine like Google that your content and your pages and products and your website are more popular than whoever the other alternatives might be. And it's a winner takes all kind of game. So most of the action happens on the first page. You know, about 9 out of 10 people will click on a result on the first page and they don't go on to the second. And if they don't find, you know, something relevant on that first page, they just revise their search results. At least that's my own personal experience and what we've seen in a lot of the research and the data that we've, you know, dove into over the years. I'm sure you probably, your own experience, Evan, is similar as well, where you don't find something, you just kind of change what you search for until you find something that's relevant.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really helpful overview. Thanks for that. So one other question we always like to ask before we really dig into the topic is, what is one thing that no one listening to this podcast would know about you, Dev?
Yeah, great. Outside of work, I love being in nature. And so one of the things that I've really caught a bug around is climbing mountains. And so last year, before this whole crisis, my wife and I summited Kilimanjaro, which was our first kind of big peak, which we were super proud of. And then since then, I've got my sights set on a couple of other, you know, these 7 summits of the world effectively. So depending on how the travel situation looks, next year, I'll be in Argentina climbing Aconcagua, which is the tallest peak outside of the Himalayas.
Wow. Awesome. That's very cool. Yeah, I cannot say the same. I haven't summoned anything, but that's certainly impressive and sounds like many more adventures to come. So Dev, today we're going to be talking about pivoting messaging during COVID-19 and really kind of during any type of crisis. But this is sort of a smaller part of a larger conversation that you all have been having with your clients around crisis-proofing their SaaS business. So why don't we kind of start there at just a high level? We'd love to hear more about when you're working with your clients, kind of how you approach it. And when we talk about kind of crisis-proofing their SaaS business, what do we really mean? What all does that entail?
Yeah, so I think what we really want is a SaaS business that's resilient and bulletproof that continues to grow no matter what the economic climate might look like. And I think that was something that was a bit of a rude shock and a surprise for so many SaaS companies when this crisis first started. And the three problems that they were typically seeing at that point were the campaigns and ROI started tanking. There was a fair bit of panic. Pipeline started vanishing. And so for companies that had a demo-based pipeline, effectively calls were being canceled. There were no shows for leads. And I think the biggest challenge really was in between some of the reforecasting plans and what do we do, and if this scenario happens and that scenario happens, marketing teams were left in a position where they really didn't know what to say. And you know, what we saw and what we were advising our clients to do was to really look at it and go, if you were going to market with the same content, messaging, and angles that were popular and creating demo and trial pipeline in early February even, you'd be perceived as being completely tone deaf given everything changed overnight. And so part of the crisis proofing aspect was really helping to be like a beacon of hope to their customers and to show them a path to be able to get through this without some of those adverse effects basically happening. And we figured out that there were, you know, three different kind of categories of companies as we started talking, not only our clients, but the greater community that we serve within B2B SaaS. And we figured out that there were these three different kind of camps that people sat within. You know, they're the ones that were effectively, they saw a big opportunity and they decided to take advantage of this, the opportunity and the situation that was happening to become leaders to their community. There were others that were kind of sitting and waiting to see how it was playing out. And then there was a camp of companies that were retreating. They effectively decided to, you know, bury their heads in the sand and say, let the storm pass. Let's just kind of weather this out effectively. And then we started creating some narrative from over there specifically to help the companies decide which one of those camps that they wanted to be in, rather than to just by default get in there and find out that they're in that mindset. And then a playbook effectively. So our whole crisis playing, a proofing playbook was about, what do you do and how do you know what to say now that this is happening? How do you show up to your community, your tribe, your customers, and lead them through this?
Got it. And so when you think about those three buckets of kind of some companies that are rallying, some that are retreating, and others that are taking that more wait and see approach. And so what you're saying is don't just automatically default to one of these and kind of see where you land. Really put the thought into which one makes sense for our business right now, given kind of what's going on at the company, what's going on in the broader market, and then approach it with that set of tactics kind of through those different playbooks, depending on where they're at.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you think about even in boom times, there are certain SaaS companies that grow because it's a little bit of that rising tide lifts all ships. Yep. And they're growing by default as opposed to by design, just being in the right place at the right time. And it's the same thing when you don't have the boom times anymore and we're going through a depression or even a recession like right now. And so if you don't have a plan by design to be able to navigate through this and survive and thrive at the other end of it, and I don't know when that's going to happen, and it definitely won't be a normal, it'd be some sort of new normal. Effectively, whatever camp you fall into would be by default, just by, it's a binary thing. It's either by design or by default.
Right, right. And when we think about that, I mean, what, before you get in there and start advising these clients, where are you seeing companies default to? Is there one specific kind of camp where maybe it's the retreat, maybe it's the wait and see? Where is the default today?
It's an 80-20 type of thing, you know. 20% of companies are exactly in the right place where they're either growing like mad and they're having their best months ever where they're rallying right now. And some of the reasons why they're rallying is because they see the opportunity, you know, ad costs in terms of what it costs for on a cost per click or CPM, cost per thousand basis on most ad platforms is cheaper than it's ever been in years. And so they're really like, you know, pumping in marketing dollars to be able to capture as much market share as possible. Mm-hmm. But that's 20% of companies. The other 80% is split between just proceeding as is or shutting things completely down. And in either case, I think that the outcomes that come from there is you end up having sort of this, you know, folks who are just pruning and deciding to cut back as opposed to having a defined strategy through this. They end up having an irrelevant message in the market and they end up getting ignored by prospects who are not ready to buy right now. Or worse off are the ones who basically keep doing what they're doing and they don't actually change the strategy other than cutting things off or shutting the lights off. And then that ends up being more of a tone deaf type of thing where if they're selling the same way that they were in Jan or Feb, it just doesn't work right now. It repels prospects.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's one of the things that we've worked with some of our portfolio companies on is how do we take whatever cadences you had, take whatever ad messaging you have, blow it up. If we were kind of starting from scratch, the marketing creative equivalent of a zero-based budget, you know, what does it look like? What does it look like from here?
And what we found actually was many SaaS companies were considering pulling back budgets on marketing, whether it was organic or content or paid. And obviously events suffered because they weren't able to have their trade shows in person, but they were pausing on the thought of running a virtual event or a virtual summit, mostly not because they were scared, but mostly because they didn't know what to say. And so that's really where we started getting the light bulb went off for our team, where we realized that this was a messaging challenge, not just a cash flow or a budgeting challenge. And so at the minute we unlocked for them, here's how you think about what to say and how to show up in a time like this that many SaaS companies, frankly, haven't navigated before. That's when we started having productive conversations about a pathway to move forward.
Yeah, so it sounds like the messaging piece here is extremely kind of foundational to build on for whatever you want to do, right? Whether it's pouring money into cost per click, whether it's pouring money and resources into putting on some virtual events or your outbound campaigns, whatever it is. And so let's kind of dig into that a little bit more when we talk about pivoting messaging, going away from tone deaf, really being that beacon of hope for your customers and prospects. How do you approach it? Do you think about it in these three buckets still of kind of rally, retreat, wait and see? And each one has a different kind of mechanism or tactics for the best way to be pivoting messaging. Are there kind of some broader guidelines and frameworks that you use no matter what situation companies are in? How do you approach it?
Yeah, great question. You know, we are very framework and methodology driven. But what we like to say around, you know, Powered by Search is that it's hard work if you don't have a framework. And so we try to think about how we can apply a method of thinking through this, a mental model, if you will. And so the first thing that we came up with five principles to kind of think through this. And when it comes to those three different camps, you know, where rally, retreat, or wait and see, the first thing to do is really from an executive leadership standpoint, where do you want to be? If you didn't know how, and you acted as if you'd already figured it out, which one of those camps as a SaaS company, do you want to be in right now? And how do you want to survive through this thing? That's a mental, I think, choice. And then it comes down to how you go about actually executing on it. The first thing that we started looking at was, can the SaaS company's customers be in business right now? And so that's a principle we call just read the room, which is, are your customers even able to adapt or pivot or function at this point in time? And that drastically changes how you go about supporting them. So we look at like where the customers are at, and we created as, you know, there's an emotions wheel, effectively a feelings wheel, just to kind of zero in on, are they stressed? Are they anxious? Are they insecure? Are they optimistic? Or is it a different emotion? So being able to kind of go through there and understand where they're at. The second is zeroing in on value and specifically understanding what is the concrete value that the SaaS platform is offering over there. And so a bit of how we think about the three different types of value that almost any SaaS platform creates is we've got a theory that if you were to like imagine a triangle, on one side of the triangle or the base is usually speed, which is just that most SaaS platforms are about getting to a result faster. We often tell our clients that, you know, no one wants to buy your software. What they want to buy is the result that the software gets them. And so generally, one of the things that they want is speed. And that could be done through workflow or automation. The second thing that they want is certainty. And so a lot of software companies effectively create a system that reduces risk and human error. And so their buyers are effectively buying the surety that something's going to happen. A result will be achieved on a more consistent basis, as opposed to, you know, basically plugging together a more of a janky solution. Like one of the things that we see a lot is there's so many SaaS companies out there that are effectively a better mousetrap for what you could do in, let's say, something like Microsoft Excel.
Right.
And the last thing that most buyers care about is buying insight. And that is about increasing clarity. So going from a dump of data or just information that's disparate and lives in different places to the type of SaaS companies, think like BI companies or analytics companies that turn that insight or turn that data into insight that enables better decision making. So we've been encouraging our clients and the greater SaaS community that we serve to just think about which one of these three things is your platform selling the most. Is it speed? Is it certainty? Or is it insight? And then how does that benefit shift in a boom market versus a bear market? So as an example, in a boom market, you're selling automation if the primary thing that your platform offers is speed. But in a bear market, it really, like, no one wants automation. What they want is effectiveness, especially with what's going on right now, where the number of, you know, people in the workforce has shrunk considerably, and yet the amount of work has not. And so can a SaaS platform come in and deliver value in terms of it being effective and getting results faster? And that would be a core component of a messaging shift from selling automation to selling effectiveness instead. Does that make sense on some level?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a really helpful way to break it down in those buckets of speed, certainty, and insight. How has your view shifted kind of pre-COVID to post-COVID with these buckets of speed, certainty, and insight? Have any new buckets emerged? Have some of these, you know, you mentioned that some are obviously more relevant during boom versus bust or vice versa, but are there any others outside of these three that are kind of knocking on the door saying, hey, this is actually now more prevalent because of the times that we're in?
Yeah, totally. So we created a worksheet, which is part of our crisis response kit that we basically put together, which was a couple of different trainings we did for clients, but also for the greater community as well. And one of the things we wanted to focus on was, depending on which one of those outcomes that you're selling, or that's a lead outcome, how do your prospects feel right now? And then how do they want to feel? So, and as an example, because a lot of SaaS companies do frankly sell speed as a primary outcome, that's often the most visible outcome. And then certainty and insight come afterwards. It depends on what you're doing. Obviously, if you're in, you know, if you're selling risk reduction, then you're selling certainty as opposed to speed. If it's workflow type software where you take 50 steps and turn it into a much more efficient way of doing it, it's typically speed. And if you're, you know, data analytics, BI company of some kind, if you're an AI company, often it's insight that you're selling. And so we kind of zoned in on a group that we did this training with and started getting some insights from them. And what they were responding as to when we were talking to founders and to sales teams as well, like, let's say that if you were selling speed, the things that their customers are feeling right now are they're frustrated, they're nervous, they're a bit tired because they're working really long days. And how their prospect wants to feel is confident, optimistic, and energized. So we just kind of like tried to look at that shift that was happening. And then what we looked at was, what is it ultimately that they wanted to buy in a boom versus a bear market? And so as an example, if your SaaS platform is really focused on, let's say it's about business growth, you're really selling the ability to scale one of your customers' businesses and grow them in multiple different ways, you know, revenue, in terms of reputation, in terms of workforce, that messaging doesn't jive anymore because people aren't thinking about business growth quite as much as they are thinking about business continuity. And so that's effectively what we said. Like, if you want to change your messaging and you previously were selling business growth, now you sell business continuity. If you were selling return on investment or an ROI, rather than selling the upside of ROI, sell downside mitigation, so risk mitigation. If you're selling increased profitability, sell protecting profits instead. If you're selling how to be bigger, instead shift messaging to how to be better given the current circumstances. So these are some semantics and nuances, but if you really play into it, you can start seeing that the emotions that prospects are feeling right now, there's a very specific way that you can navigate through that and get to where they want to go. Then it's about showing them the path and creating content that helps them understand that there's light on the other side of the tunnel.
I love that. I think those are some really great examples as well, just in that can apply to a bunch of different folks out there listening in terms of, you know, what's their messaging, what are they used to be based on the value that the product provides and some of the buckets and how they can think about shifting it. So that's great. So you mentioned kind of five principles. The first one we talked about was can the SaaS, can your customers really be in business right now? What's happening to them?
Read the room.
Stressed, anxious, read the room. We talked about zeroing on value. What's the third one?
It's making a concrete offer. And so this is where you're starting to think about, you know, an offer is part of your positioning as well. And so what we've seen is, we also called it opening your doors effectively. So decreasing the amount of barriers to doing business together, whether that's, you know, doubling trial periods, reducing the amount of hoops that somebody needs to jump through if they're going through a demo-based process, reducing the cost. And given that most software businesses are high gross margin, we've actively been going to our clients and saying, look, if you're in the type of space right now where if your lifetime value is high or the lifetime value of a customer in your space is high, whoever will get that customer right now will effectively lock them in, assuming that they have a sticky product. And so now you'll be, that particular customer will no longer be in the market and they will have built goodwill. That's the biggest part of it. Because if you happen to be a SaaS company that acquires a new customer and you give them a hand, you're a beacon of hope to them and say, hey, you know what? Come on board. We're going to give you a couple of months or for free, or we're going to waive our onboarding fee. We want to invest in the deal right now so that you can succeed. And you know, ultimately, how do we both get through this very difficult time that we're having right now? That builds it's an intangible amount of goodwill that will positively affect LTV down the line. Pivoting the offer design and making a concrete offer and lowering some of the boundaries, that's principle number three, which is just, you can't have the exact same, or you can, but not with the same success. We're recommending that you lower the amount of barriers and make it easier to get started for people to be able to commit. Because if you don't, what ends up happening is your pipeline is slowing down. And one of the other metrics we look at for, especially for demo-based companies, is their days to close. And so in most CRM systems, we'll configure a days to close report and look at, well, that's going to expand now, right? If a deal used to take 4 weeks to close, it may take 9 now, which has a severe impact on revenue targets. And so what can we do to make it easy to get people to just get started and then get them through this crisis? They'll remember you and they'll have a ton of goodwill and then they'll stay with you for longer.
Yep. Those are all great points. And I love that point of how do you decrease the kind of cost or risk or friction up front to get somebody to engage? Something that we coach a lot on the sales side of, you know, I think about it as how do you close all of these doors where they're going to say no? And you're kind of closing these doors of whether it's excuses or objections, and you're helping them get past those hurdles. So just one other piece on number three here of making a concrete offer. What about companies that are selling more of that kind of mid-market to enterprise, longer sales cycles, higher ACVs? Any kind of thoughts or tactics there, Dev, in terms of how they can apply this to their world?
Yeah, for sure. And so we have a number of clients that have higher ACVs that range anywhere between sort of that 20K per year up to 500K per year. And so that's a really wide range. So a few things where, again, looking at, can the customer actually function in this environment? We've got a client right now that sells into hospitals and they're overwhelmed. frankly. So their deal cycles are very different right now. And what we've been advising them is to say, you need to be a beacon of hope to your market. And so give them the tools and resources, regardless of whether it means it's going to affect a buying decision for the software platform, to help them get through this. And that's how you end up building goodwill with them. But on the other end of the spectrum, if you're sort of at the, you know, call it 20 to 50K type of ACV range, again, lowering the barrier, if you have onboarding fees, being able to absorb some of those or invest in the deal, if it's possible for you to create a proof of concept as opposed to your standard onboarding or demo-based conversion funnel, those are all great ways of being able to de-risk the commitment. If you're doing annual, are you open to doing quarterly commitments instead? If you're doing annual upfront and giving 2 months off, can you extend that and do 3 months or 4 months off right now? Now, this is not about discounting. We're actually quite anti-discounting in terms of our philosophy. It's more about saying, look, there's a whole degree of uncertainty in the market right now. And as a SaaS seller to a buyer, you can't do very much about the external amount of uncertainty that exists in their mind. But what you can do is allay their fears and give them certainty within the confine or the structure of a deal being constructed. A lot of that is just coming out to the buyer and saying, what do you need for this to start making sense to you? And we can work on payment terms. We can work on advanced payment discounts. We can work on scope reduction. We can create opportunities for carving out components of the software. This is relevant really if you have a multi-product suite where, you know, you can start giving them value where they need it right now and then maybe cap off value in other areas. And then finally, giving them some open commitment terms. So being able to opt out after a certain period of time if there's changes in their business and so on. But the key thing that we're really stressing on is how open are you as a SaaS platform and company to being flexible with your current and your future customers? And part of that is like saying, on the flip side of this, if we're not just talking about sales and new customer acquisition, a big challenge that many SaaS companies are dealing with is churn. And so one thing that we've been advising our clients and the greater community is just, look, revenue churn is a lot better than logo churn. And so if you need to take a hit right now, but keep that customer in your ecosystem, that is the right thing to do, as opposed to completely losing them forever because the deal structure that existed pre-crisis doesn't seem to make sense in the crisis.
Yeah, I totally agree. And keeping those logos just makes it that much easier to bring on new logos because now you've still got, you know, customers that are referenceable. Maybe you've got the logo on your website.
Yeah.
It's great ammo for your sales team. Okay. So that's super helpful. And I loved how those are some really concrete examples as well for the mid-market and enterprise folks listening. So we've talked about read the room. We've talked about zeroing in on value. We've talked about making a concrete offer. What is number four?
So number four is about rejigging budgets and goals. And so those are two slightly different things. In terms of budget, what we're noticing is demand gen teams now can really be heroes to their companies, especially because budgets like trade show budgets or conference exhibitor budgets have essentially been parked at this point in time, and conceivably so for the rest of 2020. So being able to reallocate those budgets to campaigns that have always worked well. So for example, if your SEO is really creating a sustainable pace of being able to acquire new demos and trials, continue investing in that. It would not make sense to pull the plug on that. If it's PPC campaigns that are working quite well, invest more in the campaigns that have a history of performing well and allocate some of that trade show budget to this right now because it's going to get you growth at this point in time. The one mistake that we often see is the folks who are in the wait and see component, by the time they start seeing a recovery, they're already behind the curve. And so now they're playing catch up as opposed to being able to invest in the right places. So a lot of that is just being able to take from one P&L budget item and allocate it to the fact that, frankly, consumption's higher than it's ever been before. One of the things that we're noticing in our own clients' analytics is that this concept of weekends in B2B has completely disappeared. And so we used to see very spiky sort of Monday through Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday, really not much activity at all. That has smoothed it out. And so now you have an extra 2 days that you didn't have before to get in front of an influencer or decision maker. And so that deserves budget that if you're not allocating to it, you won't get and you won't be able to apply either. So that's about rejigging your budget. The second is about rejigging goals. And that's really about if you're looking at your KPIs, like your cost of acquisition for specifically for a trial or for a demo, whatever that was dialed into before the crisis, if you had this exact same parameters today, you'd be setting yourself up for disappointment. And this is for like for most SaaS companies most of the time. Certainly there are exceptions to this rule, including the ones that are really killing it in this environment, like anybody who's doing remote work, conferencing, that kind of thing, they're riding the curve and the wave right now. But that being said, I think that just changing it so that it's a little bit more forgiving to be able to account for the fact that people are and prospects are consuming a lot of information. You are creating brand preference and recall with them, but that their buying behavior may have slowed down. You're naturally going to start seeing some increases in your actual cost of acquisition. And that is par for the course. It's normal to see that in an environment like this. And so if one of the things that we publish articles on SaaS marketing budgets before, so one of the common mistakes we see is as soon as it doesn't meet a certain parameter or band of performance, SaaS companies tend to shut off campaigns or dramatically reduce their investment in them. But just, you know, again, part of reading the room is like understanding that prospects take longer to make decisions in this environment. But if you're optically not in front of them, somebody else will be.
That's a really interesting point. You definitely don't want to be kind of behind the curve. It's something you want to be kind of looking at regularly and then lowering those goals or at least making them to where they're achievable so that we're not sitting in May and there's just no chance you're going to hit your end goals. But when you think about continuing to reinvest from, let's say, the trade show that was canceled into different campaigns, that's a really fascinating point you just brought up. And the fact that that campaign may still be just as successful, but because of the fact that people are making decisions more slowly, that the CAC will look like it's gone up, even though the actual maybe amount of customers you brought on for doing those campaigns hasn't.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that kind of leads us to the fifth principle, which is drive demand in the dip. And if you change your goals and parameters and those budgets as well, one of the biggest opportunities, especially in an environment where there's lower CPCs, lower CPMs right now, is to build a large audience pool. I mean, we do quite a bit of paid media for our clients around trial and demand or demo acquisition. And so the big opportunity is building a really large remarketing list. And the things that are working quite well tactically right now are things like LinkedIn or Facebook Live, or even just webinar. Webinar attendance is double what it used to be. The average webinar has about a 33% show up rates. What we've been seeing in the market are people getting 60 to 70% show up rates for that content because, I mean, people are in front of their screens all day long and they're on the internet. So they're likely to consume and there's not much else to do, frankly. All of that, even if you don't have a concrete offer at the end of a content piece like a webinar or a Facebook Live, all it does is it creates a really large engaged audience list. I mean, that's something that's hard to build in boom times because there's possibility for it not to be cost effective, but there's no better time than right now to build this large following of people who know and like the SaaS brand or the company, and then develop trust based off multiple exposure such that when times are right, and when it's relevant to make direct response type of offers, they can get in front of them and say, well, you already know us and like us. Here's an offer that makes it easy for you to say yes to trialing us or demoing with us or getting started with us.
Got it. So it's that very, very top of funnel, getting people aware, getting them a bit educated on the brand and kind of what the company does, so that when you have some of those concrete offers, going back to, you know, principle number three, you've already kind of narrowed in on that specific kind of target buyer persona, as we like to call it. So let's say companies are doing this, they're doing different Facebook Live, LinkedIn Live, they're putting on different webinars, you know, and then want to go about retargeting them later. Let's say it's a scrappy SaaS startup and they're kind of trying to figure this all out for the first time. Are there any specific tools, whether it's another piece of software or what have you, that you recommend for actually executing on this?
Yeah, I think the key part of it is just figuring out what your topic matter is going to be about and playing into the conversation that's already happening in the prospect or the customer's mind. And then as long as it could be simple, it could be literally, if you want to be scrappy, Google Docs, outline an understanding of what you're going to be talking about, and then native tools. Now there, you can get fancy about this. Obviously there's tools like Restream that allow you to be able to stream into multiple different channels at the same time. If you're a Mac user, we love using something called Ecamm Live, which is quite nifty in terms of not only being able to share a screen, but to also actually communicate with people who are leaving comments on Facebook or a LinkedIn Live. Those are all nice ways of being able to add some polish and sheen to the entire thing. But we're big fans of progress over perfection. So the simplest next step would simply be figuring out exactly where the customer's head is at right now. What's their environment and situation kind of look like being stuck working at home? And how might you offer some value, some tips, some techniques and strategies, regardless of whether that actually means that they get to use your software, have to use your software platform. And just by them feeling understood, it gives them, you know, there's value around entertainment, there's value around being understood, there's value around giving them focusing or tips and strategies that are ultimately benefits that they would have got from using a software platform anyways. But in the process, now you're teaching them about how to think about a particular problem that your software platform solves. We call this educating and motivating. And you don't really need too many different tools to be able to do it. All the tools are free effectively. I mean, whether you're doing this on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, getting on a live is incredibly easy. It's just that what we see is that most people never do. And so I think the tool or the hack is simply getting started.
Got it. That makes sense. So Dev, you mentioned one of the common mistakes you see is that they'll be in this kind of wait and see mode. And then by the time the recovery is happening, they're already behind the curve. What are some of the other kind of common mistakes you see here, whether it's related to kind of crisis proofing your SaaS business or more specifically as people think about pivoting their messaging?
Yeah, in terms of, I think, pivoting their messaging, what we've seen is a number of messages that purely focus around discounting, and that doesn't always make the customer feel any better. It certainly reduces the barrier to entry, but helping a prospect feel understood is a big component of helping shift their emotional state from, you know, they may be frustrated, worried, confused, or overwhelmed. And if you want them to feel optimistic, hopeful, or curious even, really playing into how they're feeling right now makes a ton of sense. And so I'll give you a concrete example. So one of our clients is a company called Clio, and they do case management software for lawyers. Think of them like CRM for lawyers effectively. And so before, they were running an ad on Facebook, which is all about how they help. And so, you know, with Clio, I'll just read out the ad for specificity. With Clio, the number one cloud-based legal case management solution, you can securely access your client information, use our mobile app to quickly pull up cases, and then the call to action is a sign up, right? Schedule a demo with Clio. Nothing wrong with that ad. It's a very simple direct response ad for before, you know, the crisis basically happened. But during the crisis, they're playing into the conversation that's happening in the customer's mind. In this case, they're a customer. We have three different avatars powered by search that we think about. So small tangent, daily users, managers, and check signers. And so because one of their daily user avatars is a lawyer, in this case, they targeted lawyers and their ad changed to, are you a lawyer starting to work from home for the first time? With a question mark. And so that is an example of meeting the customer where they're at. And then they start off by saying, download the complete guide to working remotely as a lawyer for 10 tips to follow for a successful remote work experience. And then the call to action changes from a demo to download. And so just by moving a little bit up the funnel and calling out what's going on in the customer's life, now they've become much more relevant to them as opposed to repelling.
I love that example. It's a great example of if they hadn't changed anything, you know, what may have been a mistake of just kind of keeping things as is and then turning that into a success story. So we've covered a ton, Dev. I think those five principles were super helpful just to help us provide kind of framework for how companies can think through pivoting their messaging right now. Are there any other, you know, tactical pieces of advice that you want to include as to how to best apply some of these concepts that we've talked about?
Yeah, I reckon that sequencing is really important. So one thing is just about like getting things done in the right order. So our reco over there would be start by just understanding what do you sell? Like, are you selling speed, certainty, or insight? Order them, put like a 1, 2, 3. The easiest thing to do is draw a triangle. And we have some resources in our crisis response kit that cover this, but, you know, understand where you're at. And then you're really making a shift between the way that you would use to sell a benefit pre-crisis to what customers want to buy in the current crisis. Then I think the second step is figuring out how are those people feeling right now? What's their state of mind and where do they want to be? If you could just snap your fingers and make their life better, what would they want to feel or how would they want to feel? And then that is where you would start to look at not only your messaging in terms of your advertising, but also on your site in terms of the content you create. But specifically over here, I think the way that you can move forward as one tactical tip is to set up a COVID-19 resource page on your SaaS company's website. Not just like a press release or a news release, but an actual resource center that can house your content related to how you're helping your customers get through this crisis. And then using that as a hub page to be able to send people to such that they can start, you know, watching the videos or downloading the PDFs or engaging with the content. That's useful to do. The other tactical tip that I'll share, and this is something that would be kind of an under the radar tip, is there's a lot of people who are now out of the workforce because they've unfortunately had to be laid off. And so they don't have access to their company email accounts anymore. And so they may be using a Gmail or a similar free email provider address, and they're quality, talented people. A lot of the times that we notice with B2B SaaS companies is that they have some sort of filter on their forms to only accept business email addresses. And that's completely fine in normal times, but this is just going a small way to say, for the time being, let's allow anyone to, if they want our content, either let's not make it gated so they can just get our content, we build goodwill. It'll be a little bit less measurable, but it'll go a long way in terms of building goodwill. The second is, if we need it gated so that we can start measuring our MQLs, our marketing qualified leads, or subscribers for that matter, let's start allowing some free email addresses. Keeping in mind, this is again part of reading the room, that a lot of people who were prospects at our target accounts are now maybe out of work and they're still interested in consuming our content because they haven't left the industry. They've just left the company that they're at right now and they're looking for their next opportunity. Let's allow them into our world so that we can start adding value to them.
I think that's another great tip too, and also applicable for students who may not have a professional email address but want to learn more about the industry and will be looking to join the workforce soon. So and something that's probably often overlooked by companies, they haven't really looked at that specific kind of rule-based element of their forms in a while. So yeah, great. Well, I think that's a really great way to wrap it up. Dev, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.